Coming up, Kelly Maroney joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV shows.
Hi, everyone. It's Ileana Douglas. Welcome to the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. To button or to unbutton? For masculine.
I'm going to say unbutton because I like seeing what's underneath there.
You
sorry.
Do?
Hey, I don't know. That's
come
a little
on.
Too real.
Come on with it. It's me too. Going to file a claim immediately.
Speaking of popcorn talk, they just made popcorn. It smells delicious.
It smells fantastic.
In the studio right now.
A lot of energy in the studio.
Yes.
I like this time of year. I feel like it's almost pre-Christmas and getting ready. And I'm getting ready to go back to Connecticut for Thanksgiving.
Next week.
And going to be missing my dance classes, of course, which can be sad.
Can you Skype in?
Oh, I would like to. We should try that sometime.
See if somebody could do that.
Yeah, from my Connecticut, from the homestead.
Yes.
My God, get my mom. That would really, she's the real comedian, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah. they're all in show business. I just get paid for it, but they're all in show business. Hint, hint. What did you do this weekend, Tamara?
Nothing, but I understand you had a big weekend.
I did.
Adding some hardware to your shelves.
Oh, my God. Beautiful award that I received from the first International Palm Springs Comedy Festival, which I hope stays around forever.
Yeah.
I was talking outside to those of us who remember the Aspen Comedy Fest, which was really, really fun experience every year to see comics and comic films and God, they used to do reunions, Monty Python, Jerry Lewis was up there, just amazing. But yes, I'm a pioneer.
Yes, you are a pioneer.
For my web series, Easy to Assemble, which I'm so thrilled. But, you know, part of my speech was to talk about so much of the work that I've done on TCM is just remembering women trailblazers and pioneers, the women that we've completely forgotten about, but we should be putting them in the history books along with so many other people. And, the early days of the internet, there was really no such thing. And so the idea to do a web series, I remember at the time, you know, trying to get people to be in the web series was like, you know, trying to get someone to fill in for jury duty for you. And it was amazing how many people, Jeff Goldblum and Ed Begley, and as I write about in the book, Justine Bateman, and Tim Meadows, Sherry O'Terry, Keanu Reeves, you know, on and on and on. It was really, we were so ahead of our time, but we were having a lot of fun. And IKEA gave me just complete free rein to do something. And the main part of my speech was that the show was really born out of a complete failure that I experienced in trying to do this pilot and trying to do something that, you know, the network wanted, and I just couldn't please them in any way, shape, or form. And out of that, to say, which I always say is so important, everything is always, it's out there. What people say about you is all out there. The only thing that is important, well, it's important what your mother says.
Yes, it does.
Important what your family says about you, but they should be the only critics. But the most important thing is to stay with your instincts. And if you think that something is good, you can't let anybody defeat you, you know? And I'm a big, big believer in that. So many times in my life, I've been told I wasn't something enough and you just cannot. You cannot listen to those kind of people. You can't, because you don't know why they're saying it.
Of course.
If you have a good idea or a funny idea, you know, you go forward with it. And I'm always feel, you know, there's an old Shaker expression from my New England, I'm not from Pennsylvania, but I used to love this expression. If you want to pray, move your feet. And same, you know, and you gotta really get into it and be, can, you know,
proactive
and do your thing, and you will be surprised. I always say the universe, you know, the moment you commit to something, the universe will come in and help you out. I have found that again and again and again. And so I was thrilled to be honored along with...
Yeah, how was the experience of receiving this award? I mean...
It was, you know, it was great because Wayne Fetterman gave me the award. Wayne and I have, you know, been friends a long time going back to the Larry Sanders days. And he's experiencing a little bit of a renaissance himself. And it's just great. It's nice to be... remembered, and I take it as a great honor that people remember the show, that it's in the history books. We were the first ever branded web series ever.
One of the questions I have about that was, yeah, you said IKEA gave you free reign. Did they also give you free reindeer meatball?
No, we had no. In fact, when we were doing the show, we had to eat veggie meatballs. They specifically made me veggie meatballs.
Veggie meatballs are delicious.
Well, hello, Tamara. That's what I'm saying. They didn't have them when we started. That's what I mean. It was this art imitates life, imitates life, imitates art. It was so blurred because we had to make, every year we did the show, they would make these vegetarian meatballs. I kept saying, you guys should make vegetarian meatballs, and they did. We had so many, you know, sort of fun ideas like that, and it's interesting. As I said, I've on and on talking about what a great experience it was to work with IKEA and to work with a company that really cares about their employees. And that is an unsolicited plug of people that really. You know, when you go to work, sometimes when you go in a movie, you go work at a company and you really see, you know, sort of how the sausage is made. But I have to say, they're just a great company. I had an absolute blast with them. They were really fun. And ended up going to Sweden, you know, to shoot a television show there.
Yes.
And so it was amazing. Other than that, my film picks of the week, I'm looking for it. Is anyone I saw, you know, oh my God, Boy Erased, just, that's a good one. Very sad. Looking forward to seeing Destroyer. It's going to be a Nicole Kidman week.
Yes.
Week next week. She's a bunch of things. And if anyone gets Amazon, I want people to check out possibly the worst James Mason film ever made. It's called Age of Consent, but it's directed by Michael Powell. So I was sucked in. I want to see what they think of that. And I rewatched this documentary on Paul Williams, which is called, I don't know, I'm Still Here. It's got one of these weird titles. But and I remember meeting the filmmaker at CineFamily, and I remember seeing the movie up there. But I just wanted to watch Paul Williams. He's now our president of ASCAP.
Oh, no kidding. Well, you know, your friend, Chris Price, was recorded one of the songs on the tribute album
for
Paul Williams, Paul Williams,
yes.
That just, like, the song just came out last week. I don't know when the album's coming out, but it's amazing.
Yeah, there's some great songs. I think Willie Nelson covers Rainbow Connection, which,
oh my gosh,
should definitely play at my funeral. Do you have do you pick out songs for your funeral, or is it just me?
No, that's just you.
Really?
Yeah.
God. Okay. Yeah. If I keel over,
yes,
immediately start playing
Rainbow Connection. All right, got it. I'm writing it down.
And we're gonna be dipping into movies from the 80s today with Kelly Maroney.
Let's do it. Let's bring her in.
I can't wait. I have some funny stories to tell you about how I discovered Night of the Comet. I'm always out there looking for films. But let me tell you a little bit about Kelly. She is perhaps best known, but she's still very young, for her roles in the 80s classic film Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which is an amazing film, Night of the Comet, and the Roger Corman film. We're going to talk about Roger Corman. Chopping Mall, and she's appeared on television in such shows as Ryan's Hope and True Blood. Please welcome Kelly Maroney. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I was so excited.
Oh, my goodness. No, I'm so glad you're here. Now, I'm going to segue briefly, because this is how I discovered Night of the Comet. I did a show for Second Looks, a show for TCM called Second Looks, and I'm friends with Penelope Ann Miller, and there's a movie that she did, which was written by William Colden, and it's called The Year of the Comet.
And you got them confused?
No, I did it. I put my list together. I sent it to TCM and Year of the Comet. And what came back was
awesome.
Night of the Comet.
That's awesome. Because people do make that mistake. That's not unheard of.
And I put it on. I was like, wait a minute. Maybe they've switched it up. Maybe Charlie thought this was better. Anyway, I was watching it. I was like, what the hell is this movie? Why have I never heard of it? And I loved it. And I thought it was a lot, I said, oh, this is so, because we had movies like Absolute Beginners in 1941. And I thought it really actually fit more in the genre of the type of films that we were doing, which was really to have fun and fan favorites and things like that. And so that is how I discovered Night of the Comet. But now I'm such a huge fan of it. It pairs well with Valley Girls,
It was done by the same people.
Yeah.
Same producers.
I think you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to Night of the Comet. But before that, now, were you born in California?
No, I was born in Minnesota. And uh-huh. then I wanted so much to be an actress. So I was an apprentice at the Guthrie Theater, which entailed being an extra in uh-huh. their productions. And then I was lucky enough to have F. Murray Abraham and William H. Macy. Wow. They were all there doing Lort Theater, and they couldn't pay us, obviously.
Yeah.
So they set up this kind of conservatory thing happening, and they taught us classes.
Wow, that sounds great.
It was, and so from there, I decided I was going to become a Shakespearean actress and only do Shakespeare and Chekhov. But I knew I had to get my technique together.
You wanted to do a couple Roger Corman films before that.
Well, this is if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your career plans. So I heard about this conservatory program, and I figured that's a great way to catch up on my classical training is to hit conservatory. And I don't, my parents were teachers. I was ready to leave school anyway. Mm-hmm. And so she said, go. She said, there's nothing for you here. I mean, because I was her last kid. All our other kids were grown up. And she just said, life is short. Do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you want to do, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting.
So that was lucky.
It's interesting because one of the things I always like about your performances and, things like Fast Times and Night of the Comet is that you're not playing it for laughs. It's like, and I think that's
serious.
Yeah, but I like that. It's not like a Paul, and we're going to get to Paul Bertel too, but it's not Paul Bertel where you're kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And I think that mm-hmm. that's what makes it enjoyable for me anyway. Now, going back to Minnesota, do you remember the first movie that you saw and
yes.
who took you to see it?
I remember it before you. I knew you were probably going to ask me that.
Yes.
This is weird. Charlie.
With, oh my God.
Cliff Robertson.
With Cliff Robertson.
Charlie. Claire Bloom.
That is a sad movie.
My sister got stuck babysitting me for some unknown reason. And we had what was, this theater couldn't decide whether it was a porn theater or a...
this is in Minnesota?
An artsy theater.
Okay.
And so this was its artsy theater time, and she took me to see Charlie. And I don't know why. She was in college.
Yeah.
And I was forever changed. When he realized... Spoiler alert. He realizes that he's going to lose. He's going to go back the way he was.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that there was the mouse, too.
Yeah.
I know it sounds... but I'm a sucker for animals. I just forever burnt, seared into my brain.
Yeah.
And then the next one, because I went to such few movies in the theater, I do remember. Somebody had a birthday party, and they took us to a theater, and it was The Time Machine.
Oh, what a great film.
And I will never forget the two things from that movie. The cigarette disappearing in the model, when it actually really disappeared.
Yeah.
That was honest to God magic. And then the window, how they were able to achieve the passage of time with the window, with all the fashions changing, and mm-hmm. then eventually the building was gone. And I thought that I didn't think this because I didn't have the vocabulary or the understanding, but what an interesting way to show the passage of time.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there watching the world go by, literally. Mm-hmm. And plus my mom was a big movie lover too.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw a lot of the old ones. She let me watch anything. She let me watch The Birds. I was like, Mom!
You're killing me with the Rod Taylor references. He was one of my first crushes.
I saw that in the book, and I thought, oh, she's going to appreciate this.
I was literally in love. Even as a child, I was in love with older men. There was, something wrong with me.
Taylor.
He was so capable and strong, and he could get you out of a crisis, like big birds attacking you.
I know.
I was in love with him.
Mine was Jimmy Stewart.
Ah, but that's a great one. That's another good one to have. In what movie? Any movie.
Any movie, Harvey, really. The first one I can think of is the Christmas movie, but...
It's a Wonderful Life.
But
yeah.
I liked it when he was bad, too, like in the Philadelphia Story, when he wasn't a good guy.
Yeah.
But it made me a little uncomfortable.
Or some of his westerns.
Yeah. And then I also had a crush on Captain Kirk.
Uh-huh. William Shatner.
Yeah, because my nephew, we always eat dinner in the living room, and he turned me on to Star Trek, which made me eternally popular the rest of my life because no other girls knew about Star Trek, and I was obsessed. And then I had an acting teacher one time, and I mentioned this to him, and he said, well, Captain Kirk was in love with his ship, right?
Wait a minute. I'm absorbing this information now. It's funny. It doesn't air. I mean, we're of the same generation, so I still enjoy, watching things on TV. So it's that idea of you could come home from school and watch Star Trek, at 4 o'clock, and it really absorbed into your psyche,
It becomes part of your daily habit. That's
right.
With the soaps. It's the daily habit. You're in their home every single day.
Yes.
And you're part of their lives for real.
I know. Sadly, as you may have read in the book, I only got one channel growing up.
I'm sorry about that.
So as far as soap operas, it was only As the World Turns or The Guiding Light. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But Ryan's Hope had all the cool people on it.
Yeah, it did.
We're gonna get to that. Okay. So when you were in Minnesota and then you went to New York?
New York. Mm-hmm.
And you studied with Herbert Berghoff?
Uh-huh. I went to the National Shakespeare Company Conservatory.
And where was that in New York?
It was in Kerhonkson, New York.
And then Kerhonkson.
I went back. Yeah, I went back to
Conshohocken.
Yeah, I was going to. I was going to do their fall program, and this is ridiculous because I had $500. I couldn't get an apartment. I wasn't of age to get a job. I wasn't anything, and I don't know how in the world. I mean, I was a sitting duck for disaster.
Yeah,
and I accidentally got the soap opera. This is. I swear to God, I was desperate, and so I went to this apartment rental thing where people are supposed to, and she looks at me, and she just goes, I might be able to get you a roommate situation, but honestly, and then she went, I have a friend who's been telling me that they're looking for a Lolita on a soap opera, Midwestern, you're Midwestern, I still have my Minnesota accent, which is,
yeah,
No offense, Minnesota. It wasn't working for me in my career. So she said, why don't you just go over there and see? So I went over. This room is impossibly small.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this woman, and she looks at me, and she goes, do you have a picture? I had one picture from one modeling session, and it was very, glamorous. She goes, it looks nothing like you, but take it, slide it under the door. And I did, long story long, I got cast.
Wow.
And much to my surprise, much to everyone's shock and amazement. But if I hadn't, I have no idea what would have happened to me.
That's interesting.
Ridiculous.
And so your cast, what year is this that you start doing?
This is 80.
Oh my God, 1980. That's crazy. So I was still in high school. And did you also work with Kristen Vigard? And who she was featured. Kristen Vigard was an actress. I think she was on The Guiding Light.
We did a People magazine cover together.
Yeah, you were like teenage Lolita, yeah. Temptress.
Yeah, it was Harry Benson was the photographer, and he was kind of dismayed at the fact that the soaps were in the process of sexualizing teenage girls because it was hot.
Right.
And they were doing it for the kids who were home in the summer.
That would have been me if I had gotten that channel.
So all of a sudden, ABC started hiring all these. Well, they all did, young girls. And so it was me and Jeannie Francis and Kristen.
I remember, I could only reference CBS, but I'm thinking that is when they brought in Meg Ryan. That's when they brought in Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan auditioned to play my sister.
She did? On
Ryan's Hope.
She didn't get the part.
And they cut her hair.
And her name was Ryan.
And they cut her hair.
They did?
Yeah.
And then she ended up...
Those producers were all friends of each other. And
yes.
So if it didn't work out or something, but they thought an actor was really good, which, you know, they would recommend... They'd say, well, we couldn't use her for whatever reason on this, but so you'd start to be passed around.
And what are some of the experiences on the soap? I mean, is it like Tootsie?
Joan Fontaine played my agent.
Okay, I'm speechless.
I know.
Already.
You think I'm speechless.
I'm going to go back and YouTube that, like the Van Johnson, which we're going to get to. Yeah, it seems incredible that these movie stars, was she living in New York?
Well, here's what happened with that. Elizabeth Taylor was a huge fan of General Hospital.
Right.
And they found out and they said, do you want to be on the show? And she wanted to know if that was a good thing or not. So she called up Richard Burton and he said to her, in one episode, more people will see you than have seen me on stage probably in my life.
Wow.
And so, yes, you should do it. Once Elizabeth Taylor did it,
right,
the floodgates opened, and we had everybody would come on.
Oh, my God.
And so Joan Fontaine told me, you notice how when somebody's famous or you respect them, you say both names?
Yes.
I would never go, so Joan. She said she called Zabar's for her groceries, and the girl on the other line said, Joan Fontaine, didn't you used to be an actress?
Oh, no.
And she went, that's it. And so she thought, this is a good way to get back in front of people.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And did she let other people do her makeup, or was she old school? Because sometimes some of the older actresses I work with, you know, are the ones with the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Walking around with the lighting and everything.
She gave me a package of Lee press-on nails.
Again, I'm speechless. This is so much fun. Yeah.
Because she didn't like my nails.
I love that.
And well, she got there. She had pneumonia or something like that.
God.
Everybody was afraid to talk to her. And I thought, we have a movie star in a little tiny closet.
Yeah.
And no one's doing anything about it. So I knocked on the door and I said, I just gave her my name. And I said, can I get anything for you?
Oh.
And she said, you're the only person that's talked to me since I've been here.
Oh, my God.
Academy Award winner Joan Fontaine. Wow.
It was pretty amazing.
And did she mess up her lines or anything, or was she good?
She was good. I mean, Sarah Felder told me that she said that's the best work you've ever done, because when she talked, I listened.
Yeah. She's Rebecca.
She's Rebecca, right. And so they gave her all these, because they had Joan Fontaine, they gave her all these monologues. Which I'm sure she was like, curses, you know. What I say I'd do this for, I'm sure she was. And it was just, I was just listening to her, you know.
It's so amazing. As you're talking, I'm like, I'm going to go home. I got to Google all. It's probably all on YouTube,
I'm sure it is, yeah.
But God, it makes you miss these fun soap operas. Now, anything, you know, again, go crazily wrong and you have to improv or any of that?
Well, you didn't stop tape. You could be fired for that. No matter what happened, you kept going.
If
you seriously mangled a line or whatever, you just kept going.
Yeah.
You know, the building could fall down behind you and you just didn't do that. So a lot of weird things happened. I'm trying to think. I was going to tell you something.
Well, I know we're going to talk.
Oh, you know who was? What else was on?
Who?
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon was on The Guiding Light.
No, he was on Ryan's Hope, too.
He was?
Yes. And I had just gone to see Diner the night before, and I had no idea because he wasn't in my storyline. I walk into the rehearsal room.
Yeah.
And there he is smoking cigarettes. And I went, I get the AD and I go, do you know who that is? And she goes, yeah. And she then seen Diner. And I go, that's the guy in Diner. And she had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God, there's a guy in Diner. And so I walked up to him. And I blow more things for myself because I'm too scared to say anything. I said, you were so good in that movie. That was about it. I didn't get to work with him.
He's very cool, calm, and collected. You know, that's not to say he's not fun, but he's very, you know, I'm effusive about Kevin Bacon. My mom does this thing where she'll say, like, I discovered that person, but I remember with Kevin Bacon when he was on The Guiding Light, and I was like, that guy's going to be big. You know, I thought he was going to be, and so exciting, obviously, to.
Yeah. Christopher Reeve came on for a brief moment. He was so nice. He started out in soaps.
Yes.
And
yeah.
He couldn't have been any nicer. And then he stepped in my girlfriend's purse, and she goes, I'm never, ever, ever going to throw this purse away for any reason. I'm not even going to use it anymore. Superman stepped in my purse, and she meant it. So, yeah, it was the days when a lot of, you know, like really cool people were coming through daytime.
And you got to work with Van Johnson.
Yes.
Which is incredible. We were talking outside. I said, Van, when I was in acting school at the neighborhood playhouse, he must have lived in the East 50s. But he would come in. There was a bakery right near school. So we'd, you know, go in the morning and get our coffee or whatever. And he'd make this grand entrance. Mm-hmm. Hello, students.
He always entered a room like that. Like, I am here to entertain you. But not in a, like, look at me egotistical way. Like, it's time for me to entertain you now.
Absolutely.
And he was doing his thing. He was giving. He wasn't like, look at me. He was like giving.
Yeah.
And it was always the case. I mean, he could walk into, I'm sure he did that when he walked into the men's room. You know,
yeah.
That's how he was. So he was on the soap. But then I did an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on there again. And so, he had this pair of red socks.
Mm-hmm.
And they were his lucky socks. And he wore them for every performance. And something was going on during that episode.
I'm already laughing.
I don't know what it is. Okay. I don't know what happened, but tension, you know, it was tense. I don't know why. And he was so bummed out. And I said, what's wrong? And he goes, they want me to take off my red socks. I said, who cares? Why? He goes, I don't know, but Angela's going to go up and talk to them. So, and we all became, you know, concerned about the red sock issue.
Yeah.
And they said, we can see the red socks. I thought, good, because it's Van Johnson. No, but so I think he's complied, which nobody had ever asked him to do that. He put them in his pocket.
Poor Van Johnson.
It was horrible.
Sorry, Van.
And then I got cast in Purple Rose of Cairo, but I couldn't do it because I was doing something else. Curses! I could have worked with him again because he was in the movie scene.
Yes.
I blew a chance. Well, I couldn't have. I got cast in a Woody Allen movie and I couldn't do it.
Oh, that's too bad. That would have been.
It's one of the curses.
Who got the part instead of you? Did you curse her out or?
No, I don't know. It might have been Kitty Swink, but I don't know.
I do remember Van Johnson. Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's fun. Now I've gotten my fix on old movie stars.
Oh, no. I have more for
you. Oh, you have more?
But you got to ask me more questions.
No, well, more, okay. More don't tease me. Who else?
Well, no. As far as that goes, yeah.
Okay. Okay, then you go, you make it to L.A. Did you decide not to renew your contract on the soap?
I got written off. They write you off like that.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. What happened was there was a feud with ABC. I was an ABC character, and the original creators of the show, they would always be fighting. So ABC would try to introduce characters that they thought were going to pull ratings. And the
showbiz.
So,
love it. Show business, great.
So there I went. So
so you go to L.A.
So I go to L.A. to do Fast Times. Mm-hmm. But I auditioned for it in New York, and that was a trip.
Did you audition for Amy Heckerling or a casting person?
Well, I was reading for
what's the name Jennifer of Jason Leigh's character.
Yeah, and one day, me, Phoebe Cates, and Brian Becker sat there for a whole day on either a Saturday or a Sunday. They ordered lunch, and we read them the entire script.
Mm. Wow.
And I thought, I've got this. I think they had her the whole time. You know, it was like if they couldn't make it work with her or something. Or it was just, I was handy because the other two were in New York. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah.
But then they offered me the cheerleader. And I said, the cheerleader? I was, you know, when I was in school, I was, you know, probably the first girl smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
I was nowhere near a cheerleader. So I realized that in New York, I was cast as the bad seed, as a bad apple. Uh-huh. But in Los Angeles, for some reason, I was the cheerleader. And I thought, that's weird.
Yeah.
So I couldn't believe they cast me as the cheerleader. But of course, I said yes. And I had to fly myself out there to do it. It was the smartest thing I ever did.
Yeah. I mean, look at the movie, how it's held up.
Library of Congress.
Yeah. Well, and it also, I fight about this actually every year. I believe it should, they're on the AFI Top 100. There are no films directed by women. And Fast Times at Ridgemont High, for me, is one of my top picks to be selected. It's so much of a part of, I think, the lexicon of American.
They almost didn't release it.
Film.
Universal hated it. Said, this isn't funny. There's an abortion in it. Pam Springsteen called me up, and she, because I was back in New York, back on the sub, because they wrote me back in. She said they might not use the movie. They might not put it out. And I said, why not? Because, you know, we would talk back and forth, and I would find out they got models for the poster. They're not using us.
Aww.
For Sean with
yeah.
They're models. They're not going to use us. So we thought maybe they would, but they didn't. Because she was the cheerleader next to
yeah.
me.
Yeah. I'm sure you had no contract or anything.
Oh, we were already wrapped.
Yeah.
We were out the door. But
that's what I mean. It's like, you know, later on, you know.
Yeah, but also they were models. I mean, we were cute, but they were fantasy women. You know, we were, well, Pam was beautiful too, but we were real. And
yes.
These women were dream girls, which made more sense.
So in shooting your scene, you've list some of the people. I mean, Phoebe Cates is in the scene, Eric Stoltz. Who's amazing.
Anthony Edwards, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Stacy, that's the name.
Stacy, yes.
Yeah.
Nick Cage is a small part.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Judge Reinhold.
Forrest Whitaker.
Did you have interactions with everybody? Or?
Yes, because that was...
Oh, my God, Sean Penn. We forgot Sean
Penn. Oh, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who?
And there were missing someone.
It was Amy's second movie she did. She had done a movie called Losing It at NYU that got a lot of attention because it was the first thing that was pretty honest about women like just wanting to get their virginity over with.
Yeah.
And that was shocking for the time because we were just then beginning to call it the way it really was and not the way we were supposed to think it was. So she got tons of attention for that, but she was, you know, very young.
To be doing the film. And written by Cameron Crowe.
Yeah, who was there all the time.
What was he like?
Well, so I read the book, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the book, my character is a little bit different. And I realized that the speech that I give in the auditorium, she actually went homeroom by homeroom in real life and gave that speech in every homeroom. But one of the things that she would say is, you know, it takes a lot of courage to get up here and do something you know people will make fun of.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in my lines. I said, Cameron, can I put this line back in? Because it's kind of like, to me, it's the point of the whole speech.
Yeah.
And he went, because he went like this. He was kind of like a Doonesbury character. He went, sure, let's see if it's happening. That's what his laugh for me. He'd say, can we do this? He'd go, or let's see if it's happening. Or after a scene, if he liked the scene, he'll go, that was happening.
That and sounds then, very like surfer talk.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. You have this little wobble in your voice that makes it funny when you say that. Were you shooting it as a comedy or as a drama, or you didn't know?
I mean,
the
really
tone of it is just so perfect.
I didn't really think of it as either a comedy or a drama. I just thought of it as a story.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably good. You know, that means that everybody was on the same, you know, tonal. You know, again, like it wasn't, as we get into the 90s, everything is sort of like a little bit over the top for me. And, you know, I think I was even in a movie called The New Guy that was like, wah! Everything that was supposed to be over the top. But these movies from the 80s, that's why they're so much fun, is that they were, you know, they were done very seriously, but there was humor in them and it seemed very truthful.
Yeah, some of them, as we progressed into the 80s, they kind of went nuts. But there's a lot of winking at the camera going on in later yes. in the 80s. You know, it's like, where's your one-liner before you do the Mel Gibson curse?
Did now I've worked with Eric Stoltz. Did you have a fun experience?
I didn't get to do much with him, but he was so lovely. I remember how nice he was.
He's a very serious actor.
Well, I was going to say that the tone on this set was we were all serious as a heart attack about what we were doing.
Yeah.
I was, everybody was, and of course it was Sean, and he was in character the whole time. If you said Sean, he wouldn't answer you.
Right.
And so, but for me, I couldn't drive, and so... But no matter what my call time was, my choices were, you can catch a ride that the Teamsters will pick you up on the way to the studio, or you can get yourself there. So I took the ride because I wanted to hang out on the set. And I would see Universal come to life. And it was just like a movie. Funny enough, that you know, it would start to get light, and then all the driving would happen. And I thought, oh, my God, this is better than... anticipated, you know, this is like really in the movies.
Yeah.
So he had to be there early because they had to do his hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he spoke to them as Sean, the hair and makeup people. So we would just kind of sit there, and there was kind of an agreement that I was going to like not break his concentration, but it was okay if I sat there too.
Yes.
And then I remember one time the makeup lady said, you know, you kids ought to be nicer to Sean. He's a really sweet boy. But, you know, he was deliberately trying to distance himself from us. And then I couldn't go to the wrap party, but I do hear that he walked in as himself and said, hi, I'm Sean.
Aw.
And he was like, you know, they were like, oh, we finally get to meet you.
Yeah. That's funny. Now, Amanda Wiss was here, and she talked about that Ray Walston was maybe the only person who didn't like really think the movie was, you know, funny. Or,
that's his personality.
He's the grown-up, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
This will never amount to anything, you know.
That's too bad, because I think Cameron was such a fan.
Ray Walston's, My Favorite Martian. Yeah.
Because when we did the Vanity Fair for the anniversary.
Yeah.
He wrote Mr. Hand, because Ray Walston had passed away. So if you look, he wrote. He walked into the classroom and he wrote Mr. Hand on the chalkboard.
Yeah. Oh. Well, sometimes
I know.
You know,
it hooks me up.
Well, you know, you have to. It's like William Shatner in Star Trek. I guess you have to wait a number of years and then you rethink. You know, if you like the film or not.
Yeah.
And did your life change significantly after the film came out?
Fast Times, I went back on the soap because I didn't want, they were bringing my, I knew psychically that they were bringing my character back. And I called the producer who, you know, I liked her very much. And I said, if you're bringing my character back, I'll come back and play her. And she said, how did you know that? She said, because everyone thinks you're just in Los Angeles and we didn't know, you know, should we recast or what? Mm-hmm. And I said, nobody's playing my part. But
I'm Lolita, damn it.
Kimberly. Nobody's playing that part except me. And so I went back. It probably was not the smartest thing to do. But then they wrote me right back off again with St. Valentine's Day Massacre. They had Peter Haskell and Jimmy Sloyan and... And, well, Mark Helgenberg was the only one that escaped that slaughter, but the rest of us all got slaughtered.
Oh, my goodness.
It was great.
And we've had Marg here, too.
Yes, we have.
I saw,
well,
yeah.
You guys were on the soaps. I couldn't get on the soaps. It was too something or other. I don't know.
I was so concerned that I would never do anything besides soaps because everyone's, those days, they look down on soaps. I remember when I got out here, you know, I had hours and hours and hours of footage of myself on a soap.
Right.
And the agent out here said, that doesn't count.
it doesn't count.
That's how I learned how to act, for Pete's sake. I was like, you know, that was the real conservatory school.
So I'm curious because when we were talking about movies from the 80s, did you audition for Valley Girl? Like,
it would be a little before my time.
It seems like, again, it's in that, it would have been, but it's in that era of movies that I like. And also, again, directed by a woman. Amy Heckerling did Fast Times. Martha Coolidge did. And so it seemed very normal. The idea of being directed by a woman didn't seem odd at all.
Well, here's the thing. The first two directors I had really were women. I mean, there was a director, the head director of the soap, Lila Swift, was a woman. I worked with her. And then Amy Heckerling, I worked with, you know, so I didn't realize how weird it was that there were no women directors until later.
Right. It became more of, I have the same experience where a lot of them, I did a lot of movies with women, and then suddenly in the 2000s is when there was no women.
Right.
So I had the same experience. And then you go back to LA, and how long was it? Was Night of the Comet one of the next films you did after Fast Times?
Yeah, everyone said you've got to go out to LA. Because I'm not a singer. If I was, it would have been a whole different life. Because that would be my big dream, is if I could sing. But nobody wants to hear that. And I'm only, you know, I was not a trained dancer or anything. So I got the talk, which, you know, it's Broadway and soaps here. You don't, you know.
Yeah.
I was afraid that being on the soap was going to kill my chances of being a movie star, which was the goal, get into film. So I went, okay. And I bit the bullet and I moved to Los Angeles and I was scared to death. So it was on one of those recognizance trips, you know, where you go and you stay at somebody's apartment and you try to get around and stuff like that.
Definitely. Yeah.
So it was one of the auditions that I had. And I remember coming out of that audition feeling just really happy.
Yeah.
Which is not always the case.
Most of the time.
Right. But I was just, it wasn't even because of the audition. It was just because I was driving along. And I had that experience too with when I met my husband. I mean, it's like your body kind of knows that something good just happened. Because I asked the producer, I said, you know, because Kathy had that big cool scene in the beginning where she got to fight the zombie and drive the motorcycle. Yeah. I said, can I read for that part? And he said, no. And I said, but he said, all right, because he was an actor too. He said, I'll give you a shot at it. And so I did. He went, okay. You're reading for Samantha.
Yes.
I had no concept. You know, actors very rarely do have a concept of how we're showing up to other people.
Yes. Now, what did you think reading, for those of people who have not seen Night of the Comet, to sort of do the plot a little bit? I'm curious. Well, I'm curious how you're going to
The first script
get out of
I got
one.
Was Teenage Comet Zombies.
Wait, Teenage Comet.
That's what it was called.
And Zombies.
And they said, right. But don't worry, that's not the name of the movie. I said, okay. So I read it on the plane because I was sitting in New York. I did all my auditions and stuff, and then I went back to New York. And I had a really cheap apartment on the Upper West Side, so I was kind of okay. You know, I quickly learned that you have shifting fortunes, and you better like not spend a dime. And so by then I learned that. And I get this call from my agent, and they said, they cast you in this movie. Where are you? I said, nobody ever called me and told me that I got cast in this movie. And so he said, well, that's fine. Get on a plane. And so I read the script on the plane, and I was laughing. You know when you're laughing to yourself out loud, and you know that you look crazy to other people?
Right.
That's how this script read so funny. And it read a lot funnier than it actually ended up playing, because when you put more reality into it, it's not as funny. But so briefly, the synopsis is it's the 80s, and there's a comet, like Halley's Comet.
Yes.
And they say in the beginning, the last time this comet came around, the dinosaurs disappeared. And so everyone's having a party and everything, and what actually happens is the humans mostly disappear into dust.
Into red dust.
Yeah, and red dust is a callback to the movie Red Dust with
it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't get that. Obviously, I got Night of the Living Dead. I got that. You know,
well, Tom Eberhardt, who wrote and directed, was a big old movie buff.
I see.
And which served me very well, I'll tell you in a second. So anyway, the only people really left are myself and my big sister.
Yes.
And later on we run into this guy who turns out to be Robert Beltran.
Hector.
And there's these people that are around that are kind of like mutant. They're in the process of turning into red dust. But before that, they kind of turn into zombies. They turn into zombies.
This is the part that's
But there's also...
We've got clips of maybe lined up, too, if we were. I'm such a fan of this movie. Let's play a clip.
All right. So then, oh, gosh, there it is. Should I talk over it or wait?
No, let people experience this.
Okay.
This is so classically 80s. Now, I got to ask you about this. Because, of course, when there's zombies, you do need to get undressed before.
I'm dreaming in this scene. This is a dream I'm having. I'll tell you what happened here, why this scene came to me.
I love this movie. Riveted.
This is the gratuitous.
I know. Cue gratuitous nudity in a film.
Well, I got it.
This is where your stepmom goes.
Good cut there. So that's one of the zombies.
That's yeah.
Before they turn. Now, why do they turn into a zombie before they'd start to disintegrate and become red dust?
If they're partially exposed.
Okay. Well, I guess it's
a very complex story, and I don't blame you for not getting it all in the first viewing.
We're going to continue talking about that. We have one more clip, which is one of my favorite things about 80s movies. But
So Barry Warnoff and Jeffrey Lewis, who...
Oh,
God of film.
Yeah.
They're these scientists who are trying to come up with an antidote, and they find out, because I get on the radio trying to find people to see if they realize that we're still alive. So their big plan is to try to generate a serum with everybody who's still healthy's blood.
Yes.
I know. Am I explaining this right?
Yes. Okay. It's all, there's a lot of different themes going on. So did you, and then you also worked with a fantastic character actress named Mary Warrenoff.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Who had worked with Andy Warhol and did the films with Paul Bartel.
Mm-hmm.
And briefly, there was a movie I did in the 1980s called Grief, which we shot in 7 days, and she appeared in that film. So, and she's obviously a classic sort of cult figure. And what was it like to
I was
work
scared because she's very intimidating. You know,
she seems it.
She's dark.
Serious, man. I thought, oh no, she's going to eat me for breakfast.
Yeah.
So much to my surprise, And I was mostly working on like how to pass out from a shot realistically. That was a big technical thing for me at the time.
Yes.
So I had that to concentrate on. But she came and she played that scene so motherly. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect it. I didn't see it coming. And it was a dream come true. It was, I just never in a million, because she was playing such, you know, playing it to, I never expected her to be so tender and gentle with me.
Yes.
And it was such a great choice.
Yeah, she was, didn't she write a lot of her own dialogue?
Something was going on there that I was not privy to, but there was something going on there.
I mean, again, that's what's the fun of the movie. A couple times you're like, wait a minute, what movie am I in now?
Well, sometimes they don't even let you know. Like, I was the only one that got to see dailies.
Oh, really? What'd you think when you were watching it? You would go, this is a train wreck or this is brilliant? Did you have any clue?
Because
you never really know, do you?
No, you never really know. But I got to see, like, window washers in the shot and stuff like that, and watch the producers swear and jump up and scream and stuff like that. But this, I think you're mature enough to handle it. You can watch the dailies. I was very proud, and don't tell anyone, so I didn't. I was very proud of myself. What was the question?
Well, there's so many. Now, you have a great look in the film, which is another part of the fun.
That was designed.
Yeah.
John Muto designed that.
Now, was there any thought of like, well, you know, I was a cheerleader. In fact, maybe I shouldn't be wearing another cheerleader outfit or.
I was surprised to say the least. to say the least, because two cheerleaders in a row. But the reason is Tom Eberhardt, when they were talking about casting, said, you know that irritating cheerleader in Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Because
right.
He was going to kill me. Originally right. In the script, I was going to die. He said, get somebody like her.
Yeah.
So, you know, because his thought was, she's going to be so irritating that when she dies, everyone's going to be happy.
Oh, I see.
He didn't know I was coming. So they said, well, you know, we can actually get you that annoying cheerleader. And he was like, okay. You know, I didn't know it, but I was already in really good shape.
Yes.
I had a good chance at it before. I had no idea, though. So there was one girl that was auditioning for my sister, and she was a blonde, too.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a really good actress. And the producer said, why do you look so nervous? And she said, because I'm the only blonde sitting here. And I thought, well, no, you're not. I'm blonde. And if I get this part, then it would make sense if we're blondes.
Right.
Yeah. But because Kathy and I look nothing alike, right?
No, which is, again, part of the fun.
I'm like,
wait a minute. She's her sister?
I asked the producer. I said, we look nothing alike. And he goes, yeah, I know. There's something for everyone in this movie.
That's true.
Like, oh.
Now, you had another funny thing with, is it true that the actress, Sharon Farrell, actually hit you? It looks like she's, you have a scene
I
early on.
I made her
on.
Hit me. Because we were going to be there all night long. Well, I had a contentious relationship with my mother on the soap. And it was Louise Schaefer played my mom. And she taught me everything I know. And I'm eternally grateful to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still my one of my dearest friends, but we would have to slap each other and stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember one time in particular, she was so tired, and she goes, "All right, it just hit me." And I said, "What?" And she goes, "We're going to be here all night long. Just hit me."
Right.
No, wait a second. No, you know what? That was me. That was me. We were standing there all night long.
That's how many hours you were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't even remember.
Yeah. And we couldn't get it. And and it was me that said, isn't that strange? It was me that said, just hit me. And she goes, what? And I said, get us out of here. Just really hit me. I'll survive. And so she did, right? And we're having the same experience, because not only was she supposed to hit me, the hit was supposed to be convincing. And then I had to do like a tumble. I had to throw myself over the couch and roll and end up by the TV. So I had stuff to do.
Well, it looked like in the early on, like you take a lot of the beatings. Like you're very physical. You're getting thrown around by zombies. And did you have any training for that?
I was just kind of like that myself naturally, you know.
Just wanted to do.
I would just do whatever. I was so enthusiastic. I mean, I was the most enthusiastic person about being in the movies that you've ever seen in your life.
Okay, now the other thing I have to ask you about your look, because I'm obsessed with hair. I always say hair is like 90%. Your hair is so big, and there's at one point, there's a shot in the film where it's all, it's literally all hair. Like your hair, the 80s. Look at your guy's hair.
Well, you know whose hair I was copying? You're not going to believe me.
Whose hair?
Susan Hayward.
You were doing Susan
Hayward was a... I only saw her movies on TV, but she and Katharine Hepburn had this look. They did something with their hair, and I tried to copy it. And then how happy was I when in the 80s it became popular to,
so 80s.
To curl your hair. And then I thought...
Hot rollers.
The more I fluff my hair out, the better I look. And so we just went with that.
It did. It looked good. Now, this is, again, the movie stopped still to have a kind of an impromptu dance number where you do Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Which we had no idea we were going to be dancing to that.
Really? Now, did you not know the song? You just had to fake dance?
Yeah.
Oh, I love
it. We danced to something or another. It was very uninspiring. And we were really tired. But
now I'm thinking of Susan. I'm thinking of how you got Susan Hayward. Out of your hair. Did you use Clairol hot rollers, or how did you achieve that look?
Yeah, hot rollers and tons of hairspray. I didn't even tease.
It actually has, again, what's fun about the movie is it has a lot of fun, innovative things like this, and then it shoots you from above. And again, that's what makes it a fun, I guess you have to call it, do you call it a cult? I call it a cult movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think of that as a...
I was surprised. I was looked up, because at one point we were talking about maybe we'd just do cult movies, so I looked them up. I was surprised at the number of movies that I would consider more mainstream that they considered cult.
Well, the times change. I mean, the ones that I would consider cults or second look movies that I always sort of like to say is that maybe was this movie a hit when it came out?
It was making money, but they had to pull it because they had 1941 coming in.
Oh my God, which was on my other show, which was also considered a big bomb too. Well, I highly recommend it as in the work of Catherine Mary Stewart, who plays your sister in that. We've got to get to Chopping Mall.
Okay. Yes, we do.
Did that come about? Well, that's a Roger Corman movie.
We got really good reviews. Vincent Canby said that we had a sure future in action comedies, which we're still waiting to see if that pans out. Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel gave us two thumbs up.
Well, this was the era of Weird Science, and there was all these kind of movies like that are a lot of fun to go back and
When Roger Ebert said, go see it, go see Kelly Maroney, the director cut that little slice for me. I'll tell you what, when you're really down, if you can remember something like that, those are the things that keep you from just like flushing yourself.
definitely. And then Chopping Mall is one of the funniest trailers. I love this trailer. It's great. But did you have any reservations about working with Roger Corman, or were you thrilled? So many great people have worked with Roger Corman.
I just thought, well, first of all, okay, it was actually, Julie had decided that she wanted to produce a movie. So even though it was Corman, Julie was the producer. Roger was all over it. I did have a recurring thing of, I was with an agency that was very concerned. Because, I also got cast in a Woody Allen movie. I mean, my big hero was Betty Davis. I wanted a Betty Davis career. And they said, you keep doing these low-budget movies, you're going to ruin yourself. And I said, but I'm making my rent, and no one's ever going to see them.
Oh, no. Cue Comic-Con and lines of people.
Yeah. And you know what? If it wasn't for them,
But the funny thing is, as a film lover, I go back and I watch movies like this and I find them more enjoyable because there's a certain nostalgia, there's a certain naivete, and they do have scares in them. They do have jump moments, but they seem to have, and I've spoken to Joe Dante about this, about horror movies. They have humor, and what he always said, humor is so important in a horror movie.
Oh, yeah, because you can't just be scared the whole time.
Yeah.
No. You have these little breaks. They have to give you a break.
Yeah. So back to Chopping Mall.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
best day on the set of Chopping Mall, or worst day?
A lot of people would consider the best day of the day they shot the head exploding.
Yeah.
Which was just plain gross. I really.
You were a Shakespearean actress.
I thought so. You know, that was there was a pretension to that, but that was out the window by then. I was in the city where you eventually could become a movie star if you wanted to, and that was it. You know, that was the original thing when I was a little girl. So
yeah. Well, it's interesting. I guess nobody has, you know, now consumerism is in, but a Chopping Mall and Night of the Comet, both, I guess, the message is commercialism.
And Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, consumerism.
I was in three malls in a row. I mean, I've done other things too, but the things that I've known that pop up in people's minds is about three malls in a row.
That is funny. Isn't that interesting how things... I kept being in snow movies. I was like, I cannot be... I was constantly in the snow and freezing. It was not good. I was reading this book, Invasion of the Bee Girls. Great, fantastic book. A lot of fun. I'm always recommending fun movie books. But did you like participating in that? Or again, was it wanting to be identified as...
A lot of women didn't want to be identified with it, but because she got turned down by a few people. But I knew Jewel, and Jewel, the whole reason she did that book was she was looking for her mother, mm-hmm. and she thought if she got a lot of attention for something, that her mother would see her and find her.
Wow!
And so she got us on the Joan Rivers show.
Yeah,
you know, with screams, blood curdling screams. Speaking mm-hmm. of
yes.
Joan Rivers wanted us to scream, so I screamed for her.
Oh, God.
Wow. Yeah.
That's so funny. Rosie O'Donnell wanted me to scream for her, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, she was very upset with me.
She was?
Yeah. Oh. They were like, they came backstage and were like, we want you to do the scream. I was like, mm-hmm. I really don't want to do the scream. I've told the story. It's not really that funny. And
right.
They weren't thrilled with me.
So that wasn't my first choice of something to do, but I really wanted to help Jewel at the time. And I thought, hey, if this works, and it did work.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's a fun book to read.
No, now she found her mom.
Yeah. She did?
Yes, did work.
Oh my God. So that's even, and did you meet, have you done the circuit of like Comic-Con? And because I think these fans are,
they're amazing.
Amazing. I actually found this quote from Mary Warrenoff that she talks about, you know, that the cult movie fans, you know, they're the most loyal fans.
They're lovely. And they walk up to you and they look like Satan. They're so sweet. And you say, what do you do? And they go, I work in an animal shelter.
That's so funny.
I'm a hospice nurse.
Yeah, exactly. And this is their thing. The stories that you're not going to hear unless you do these conventions.
Mm-hmm.
I took my wife on our first date there.
With me, it's my first boyfriend.
Yeah.
It's my gay fan base.
Yeah. And so I was at the Joss Whedon convention.
Yes, which he, I want to note that he credits Night of the Comet for influencing Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I think
I knew it too. I happened to be standing on Hollywood Boulevard in the poster for the film.
Yeah.
And I went, they ripped me off. Mm-hmm. I saw it right away.
So it's familiar.
So when he started saying that on the internet, somebody said, you should really, and I, no, you know. I mean, it took me like a couple of years to say thank you for mentioning Night of the Comet. So you can just imagine. So I got talked into, I sent him an 8x10 and I said, thank you for mentioning it and, you know, something nice about it. I can't remember what now. I don't even know if he ever got it.
Well, maybe did. Josh Whedon, did you get that picture? If you did, reach out to Kelly. What are some of the things that you're doing currently so we can catch up?
I was thinking about this. A lot of people, when you get interviews, people request interviews, they want to talk about what's it like for women in Hollywood, you know, past, you know, when they start aging in Hollywood.
Oh, that's so funny. I have no interest in
that. Well, I know. I say, too. I say, I'm the wrong person. I say that I'm the wrong person. It's a good chance to not have to do it, too.
I just want to talk about Van Johnson.
That's... Yeah. I always say, I'm not having a bad time. I've been... You know, I feel like I'm having like a resurgence as myself, whereas I got, for so many years, I was that kid with the funny hair in the mall. I couldn't get past that.
Right.
I just couldn't get past it. And now, after, you know, so much patience and just not giving up, I'm still going to be here at the end of the day, so you might as well, you know, that kind of thing. Now people are starting to go, oh, yeah, okay, this is Kelly now.
Right.
But it took forever. Mm-hmm. So I got a movie coming out called Exorcism at 60,000 Feet. And I was saying, guess what it's about?
Is it an exorcism?
Exactly.
On an airplane? Are there snakes
I thought it was, that's the worst title I've ever heard. And then somebody said, no, it's a good title because you know exactly what it is.
Yes.
Okay. So it's a cross between The Exorcist, Snakes on a Plane, and Airplane.
Okay.
And there's like some really wrong humor, guy humor. And the guy said, well, I wanted to make a movie that I wanted to see. And I tell people that and their eyes light up. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what a concept, make a movie that you want to see. It's so simple.
Yes.
And yet, so it's a cast of... like I said in my email, the usual suspects, Lance Henriksen, Bill Moseley, mm-hmm. Adrian Barbeau, Bai Ling, Kevin O'Connor, you know, the people, if you saw all get into an airplane at the same time, you'd go, don't get on that airplane.
Something bad's going to happen.
Unless it was to a convention. Unless they're going to a convention, off that airplane.
Well, you said the cast, I'm not going to say who, and do not say it out loud, but there's one name I was like, okay, except for that one. There's one person on the list that's I'd be a little nervous about. But,
yep.
But how about Adrienne Barbeau? Yeah. She seems like she'd be awesome to work with.
I didn't get any scenes with her, although, because she was sitting
on
an
airplane.
She was sitting in first class.
I did an airplane movie, and we were 4 months. We were all... trapped together. On
I
the plane,
know. You would think we were in something else together too, but we worked different days. She's lovely.
Yeah, she seems wonderful. So when you are relaxing, what kind of movies do you? What are your? Do you have favorite movies? You know,
well,
that you watch.
I watch Turner Classic. That's a go-to. Turner Classic movies.
That's
probably
fun,
because my mom and I watched them together. You know,
yeah.
Old movies. That was my school. That's what I, you know, I saw her face light up when she watched them, and I realized that's what I want to do, mm-hmm. make my mom's face light up.
Oh, that's great. Well, they have TCM Underground. That's where they sometimes show a lot of the, you know, are you a fan of the 80s movies like I am, the cult movies?
Yeah.
I love them. Do you have any favorites that you watch or that you look back on? I love Valley Girls.
Valley Girls, lovely.
It's pretty... amazing.
Flashdance?
I love Flashdance.
I know. Let's talk about soundtrack.
It's interesting in the 80s. Again, and your movie has it too. They have great soundtracks.
As a matter of fact.
What? Uh-oh. What's happening?
I brought you a present.
What?
It's remastered.
Oh, my God. Kelly, this is so nice of you. Thank
of
you.
Course.
Oh, my God. Look at this.
So it's the CD of the
music
excited. From Night of the Comet remastered.
Yes.
This is amazing. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I
got the book.
Wow.
I got a present too.
I'm going to immediately sell this on eBay.
Sometimes I want to write. I say to the people, and they go, "No." I go, "What shall I write, dear eBay buyer?"
Yeah. I always write, "Don't sell this on eBay," just to mess them up. Oh, this is amazing. I wonder if I can't even open them. Some of my favorite.
I can't open those either. You have to take a pen.
Yeah, I have to be very careful. Do you stay in touch with the director, by the way?
You know, we were such good friends, but he moved and he started his own little studio where he gets to do exactly what he wants to do.
Yes.
And that's it. He doesn't want... So I kind of felt like I was bothering him after a while, so I kind of stopped because he was always a curmudgeon anyway. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I started to get the feeling I was bothering. We did two movies together. We also did Face Down with Joe Mantegna and Adam Ant, and you know.
Now that one I have not seen. Is that worth seeing? Should I check that one out?
I'm going to say my movie's not worth seeing.
Trust me.
That's a loaded question. Is that worth seeing?
I got a couple of like, I ran into an actress lately and we were at a party and I was like, hi, we did a movie together. I go, I haven't seen it. And she goes, I haven't seen it. And I was like, all right, I don't feel bad.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. I actually like this movie a lot. I play a schizophrenic.
Well, no, I meant it in the way that I really like Night of the Comet. So I'm a big fan, you know, I like to see all of the director's work just to see, you know, the bits and pieces and to see if they all add up to something. You know,
I understand. Yeah. Well, he had done Soul Survival, which was serious. And I think he wanted to do a comedy. And what was weird about it was some people thought it was a comedy and some people thought it was serious. So we would shoot a take that was pretty funny. And the one producer would run up and say, this is serious.
Yeah.
And so we do a serious one. And that's why, I mean, one of the reviews said when it came out, this doesn't know what it wants to be.
Right.
And it's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes it work, because we are the last people on Earth, and that does suck for teenagers.
Well, I think that's what everybody was worried about in the 1980s. Well,
that's the thing, too, is they didn't end up killing me, obviously.
Yeah, thank God. I almost thought they did. There's a minute where I'm like, oh, no, they're going to kill her.
And then in true classic, he was a big Preston Sturges fan, so classic. The guy drives up and I have, you know, it's like the two marriages at, quote unquote, marriages at the end, which makes it a comedy. Well, because if there's a wedding at the end, it's a comedy.
Yes, I saw that. I almost thought they could have done, well, my one critique of the movie is I actually wish it had a little bit more in the beginning to set up the family, because that's the only part that I wanted to kind of go back. I mean, I know it's a funny movie, but I wanted to understand a little bit more before everybody else got killed. It's sort of like it opens with everybody getting killed, and it feels like it needs 10 more minutes to see people, but maybe you didn't have the budget. I'm guessing you didn't have to shoot up.
Because you're a movie lover, you know, and a story lover. And a lot of times people are making things for the casual observer who's not going to sit still for character development.
Right.
As we've seen more and more as the time goes by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes. I think that was it. Because people have said, you know, that's such a casually dysfunctional, abusive house. You know, we don't even comment on it. It's
a great movie. I highly recommend Night of the Comet. Please come back anytime and continued success. And it's wonderful to meet you. And
wonderful to meet you, too.
Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, I was going to say.
Yes.
What you got? I got this book. Oh, this is a fabulous. No, I'm a big autobiography fan.
Uh-huh.
You know, Tom gave me Irving Thalberg's biography. I read them all the time. I love this very much.
Oh,
I was going to tell you one other thing. And then I promised everyone can go home.
Yes.
So Tom took, it's about the sisters not looking the same.
Yes.
He said, have you ever seen, who Carol Lombard is? And I said, do you Buttle? And he goes, he said, that's the movie. My Man Godfrey. He said, because there's a mean sister and Carol Lombard, who's an idiot.
Right. Right? Yeah.
And so he said, I don't want you to play Carol Lombard, but that's the feeling I want. And I went over to his house and we watched My Man Godfrey.
Aw.
He said, that's what I want.
Oh, that's great. I love that. See, it's so interesting. You see a movie like that and you don't know what goes on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. He's saying, mentioning Red Dust and Carol Lombard and all these really cool things. So it enhances the enjoyment of watching the film. So anyway, well, thank you again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You
guys, it's a blast. This is a blast.
You can find Kelly on Twitter and on Instagram at Kelly Maroney, KellyMaroney, and her website is KellyMaroney.com, and look for her in Exorcism at 60,000 feet.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Kelly. And do buy Ileana's book, I Blame Dennis Hopper.
That's right.
Paperback.
If I'm still on camera, I don't know if I am.
Check us out on Facebook, and our website is ileanaspodcast.com.
That's right. Thank you, everyone, for continuing to listen to the show. I really appreciate it. We're going to take a couple weeks off for Thanksgiving. But we will be back, and like I always end the show, everyone's life is a movie. Today was a 1980s movie. I love it.
Yeah.
With the zombies. I've never been in a zombie movie. I feel like I'm zombie material.
You're zombie material. Absolutely. However, it's the blood is cold.
That's true.
You're the person who has to stick their fingers in there to make.
I'm out. I want to be. I'm not going to be in a zombie movie. Everyone's life is a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's so hard to end the show, but it is over. Thank you so much for being here, Kelly. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you so much.
See you next time. Look at this.
Bye.
I love it.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.